Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Stagecraft, Variety's theater podcast, your backstage pass to intimate conversations with stars, creators, and industry leaders on Broadway and beyond. I'm Gordon Cox. On this episode of Stagecraft, I'm talking to the actor and Tony nominee, Corey Hawkins. He's in the running for a Tony Award this season for his performance in the recent revival of Susan Laurie Park's Pulitzer Prize-winning play, Top Dog Underdog. He'll be competing next month in the same category as his co-star in Top Dog, Yahya Abdul-Mateen II. Hawkins has also been on Broadway in revivals of Six Degrees of Separation and Romeo and Juliet, but the Juilliard graduate is perhaps best known for his busy career in TV and film, and even on screen, a lot of his work has ties to the theater. He played Benny in the movie version of In the Heights, and Macduff in the Coen brothers adaptation of Macbeth. Plus, he's got two more movie projects coming up that'll get theater fans excited. Later this year, he'll appear in the eagerly awaited movie version of The Color Purple musical. And he's also on board the new movie adaptation of August Wilson's play, The Piano Lesson. Now, fresh off his Tony nomination, Hawkins is in the virtual studio with me to look back on his experience in Top Dog Underdog and share with us how it's still resonating in his approach to the work he's doing now. He'll also let us know what we can expect from The Color Purple and The Piano Lesson on screen, and explains why just the other night he ended up at a surprise dinner with Patti LuPone. Hey, Corey. Thanks for joining me.
What's up, man? Thanks for having me on.
Yeah. I am often talking to people at the beginning of their Broadway journey with a show. You know, they've usually just started, maybe they're in previews or the show just opened, but your perspective on Top Dog Underdog is a different one because you've already been on that journey. You were in the show for something like 4 months and, you know, you went on the ride. What are your kind of standout memories of the run?
Oh, wow. It's interesting because when you close a show, man, sometimes it can feel like a bit of a blur. And you need maybe a little bit more time away from it to look back and think about what it is that we were able to put together and accomplished. The biggest impact I think the show has left for me was just to be able to see the audiences afterwards. Sometimes because the show is such a you know, it requires so much of us, it's hard to do anything else after the show. But yeah, one thing that Yahya and I were very sort of adamant about was just meeting people outside afterwards, because Top Dog Underdog is a heavy piece and deals with a lot. And it's always someone's first time seeing the play. And it's always just great to hear their thoughts, their questions. We never have answers for them, you know. The answer is like maybe come back tomorrow, and it'll be a completely different journey or show, depending on who's top dog and who's underdog at any given moment. And so, it was just thrilling, man, because we got to, like, I look back on it fondly because I've had some really awesome opportunities, but never had a role that challenged me quite as much as Lincoln.
Yeah. Can you expand on that a little bit? What particularly did you find really challenged you?
Well, for one, initially from the get-go, I didn't really know going in if, you know, I would actually be playing the older brother, because first of all, Yahya is, you know, just a couple years older than I am. And so that was the first initial, I wouldn't say challenge, but just envisioning yourself in a role, I didn't necessarily see myself as Lincoln. And so you have to automatically, you have to just kind of get over that and get to work. There was just so many. Like, first of all, anytime I'm playing cards, I mean, Lincoln, he plays cards, right? So anytime I actually play cards with, like, you know, my friends, I always pass the cards when it's time to shuffle, because I don't know how to actually do that. The cards end up going anywhere. But Lincoln is so facile and so, you know, he was a legend. You know, that's what he's known for, is being one of the best three card Monty hustlers. I had to learn how to do that. And the practice of that, keeping those cards in my hand day after day after day, even on the days off, literally having those cards in my pocket everywhere I went, was new and different. And then I had to learn how to play the guitar for this as well. And then we had to learn all of those lines. It was just two of us, and neither of us really left stage the whole time. So it was a thrilling challenge to jump into, because again, it requires so much of yourself, and then spiritually, where you have to go night after night to let Lincoln go it was challenging as well.
Yeah, for folks who might need a refresher, and you've sort of alluded to this already, in many ways Top Dog Underdog is this very intimate story of these two brothers, but it also kind of is epic, or at least mythic, in terms of some of the kind of ideas and themes that it touches on. So when people ask you what the play is about, what did you tell them?
I would always repeat what Susan Lloyd-Parks said, because it was genius. And anytime I try to explain this play, it would be cut to like 5 minutes later, and I'm still like trying to talk about it. It is Susan Lloyd-Parks described it as basically two brothers who live in an apartment, both named Abraham, one named Lincoln and one named Booth. Mm-hmm. And then she said, "Badum bump," you know what I mean? And then that was how she always talked about the play. And because it's a play that literally, it is a fable when you're talking about that sort of mythology, it is very much a cautionary tale, a moral tale. But you watch these two brothers in this very tiny apartment try to exist, they laugh, they love, they cry, they're up, they're down, and then, you know, the rug gets pulled out from under you by the end of the play, and you're in a completely different journey than I think audiences initially think they're on, and that's the magic of her work. That's why she doesn't really like talk about exactly what it is, but because the plot is so interesting. I mean, they're literally just sitting in the room talking to each other, and you have to, as an actor, activate that. But you know, a father named one son Lincoln and a father named the other son Booth, and there you have it. And then the play starts, you know.
How did you and Yaya as actors activate that, as you said? Because there is a danger of it just feeling like, you know, two guys sitting in a room talking, but you know, when it doesn't, why doesn't it feel like that? What are you doing to make it not feel like that?
Well, I will say Kenny Leon was a big part of that.
Yeah, the director.
Our director, Kenny Leon. He pushed us, particularly hard. I remember when we started, Kenny asked me, he was like, you know, do you want to be good, or, you know, you want to be great? Because you guys can totally come in and like just do your thing, and you know, you're both very well, you know, or I can, you know, just push you guys that much more. And I was like, yeah, push me, man. Like, of course, like, you know. And then cut to, you know, a few weeks later, I'm like, I'm like, Kenny Leon, you drive me crazy. But he just encouraged us to be students of the world, to look outside of ourselves. Every day we came in, we would just talk about our environments and you know, just encouraging actors to not be so focused on that, but also be on the work in front of you, but just also to be focused on the life you have to live in order to bring yourself to the work. And it got heavy. It got very heavy. But you know, in terms of activating. And I know also Susan Lloyd Parks was in the room, and she, you know, she said it's rare that these guys are just still, you know, it's rare that these guys are just, you know, sitting and talking. And so a lot of it was just pulling back and pushing and seeing how far we could go. I would push Yaya and Yaya would push me, and we'd do some things in the rehearsal room that I'm so glad didn't end up making it into the play. And some things that actually surprised us and did end up making it into the play, and just seeing how far we could go with their interactions and just human nature. And we were pleasantly surprised.
Yeah. And what did you end up finding you connected to? You said you weren't sure, or you were surprised to be Lincoln in the play as mm-hmm. opposed to the younger mm-hmm. brother. What did you end up connecting to in the character in the end?
Lincoln is, I have this, I'm starting to find that a lot of the characters that I'm drawn to, are characters that are enigmas, in a sense, characters that I actually can't quite put my finger on. And I feel like success for me is that I don't think I ever get to the point where I figured it out. And I would have loved to have maybe another month or so or a couple months more with sitting with Lincoln, because I just felt like I got to go deeper and deeper with him night after night after night. You know, he's a man who cares deeply about his brother, but he has this past. You know, his brother wants him to teach him how to be one of the best three-card Monte hustlers. But for Lincoln, that is his drug. That is the thing that, that's the door, the Jekyll and the Mr. Hyde of it all. Mm. And sometimes allowing himself to be the underdog so that his brother can shine, so that his brother can feel as good as he can in their tiny little castle of a world, because outside of those walls, those two men are not seen at all. These are men who we walk by every day and would deign to know their story. And so it just fascinated me, this man, and how much he had to take on. This is a man who put on an Abraham Lincoln costume. He puts on white face every day. He goes to work and he lets people come in and shoot him over and in the arcade over and over and over. And what that has to do to somebody, it was a question that fascinated me and a premise that I was like, oh, this can definitely, like, we can definitely keep pulling at the seams and just see sort of how fucked up he actually is and how sad that is. But then you watch him step back into his power when he picks up the cards, after his brother pushes him to pick up the cards. And once you see, I think that's the thing, you know, you see how dynamic he is. You see that he's a magician. You see that he is a charming, witty, you know, and it is a battle of wit, you know, throughout this entire thing too. So they may be sitting down, but they are jumping leaps and bounds and questioning, you know, life in ways that most of us don't do on a daily basis. So it was just thrilling to be able to play somebody who it just felt virtuosic in terms of the possibility. And again, it completely, like, people would come back for like a second and third time and see completely different things, just night after night, because we were finding different things night after night. Our conversations halfway at intermission and our conversations at the end of the show were thrilling.
What's your sense of how your Lincoln ultimately changed by the end of your run versus at the beginning of a run? Is there an easy way to characterize kind of how your performance evolved?
It wasn't until Kenny Leon, he called me one night. He has a tendency to do this. He called me one night and he gave me just, we started talking about the cards in the sense of, and we just started drilling down on these cards being the drug, the thing that he cannot go back to, but also the thing that he is literally being drawn towards. He's threatened with the possibility of losing his job. He finally does lose his job, and the one thing he's really good at is the thing that's taken, literally taken friends away from him. Tragically, it's taken his life away. But he's really good at it, and that's the thing where, you know, he flies. He sees himself in that, and it was hard to wrestle with that in the beginning, because I'm also, you know, I think we were just juggling so many things. I mean, just the nature of the work and the dance of it all in previews was just a little, it felt like work, you know. It felt like, okay, these are the building blocks, these are the things. And I remember Kenny just calling me one night and just giving me permission to just let it go, and really, we would pick certain things each night sometimes. You know, he would call and say, you know, think about this only, with, and don't, you know, don't mention it to Yaya. Just see what happens. And so that would just evolve and evolve and evolve. And it was really one of those slow, gradual, things. And then it's interesting because Yaya, his process, both of our processes are very different. But we're both, you know, trained actors. We both speak the same language. But Yaya some nights would come in, and sometimes he would tell me what he wanted to play with, and sometimes he wouldn't. And sometimes, you know, I'd walk through that door, and that booth I saw that night is slightly different, and that was fun, man, because again, it kept it alive and it kept us digging and it kept us curious. And so by the end of the run, I think Lincoln was, he was just a clearer picture to me. He was easier to access. I kind of knew physically where he lived, which was different than where I live. And that hurt quite a bit. I had to do a lot of PT and, you know, just to, you know, sit in that day after day. But yeah, it's just slowly deepening, I think, over the course of 16 weeks.
I'll have more with Corey right after the break. Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. And now here's more with the Tony-nominated actor, Corey Hawkins.
That must be a fairly intimate bond that you develop with an actor when you're up on stage with just the two of you, you know, with, you know, one other person to rely on. And plus, you've been through that whole kind of rehearsal process and all of that. Tell us a little bit about how working with him kind of influenced how you worked on stage.
Yeah. Yaya is incredibly gifted. And we knew, I'll just say this. He knew when it was, when we got day one of rehearsal, that I was going to be coming in ready to go, you know? And I think I knew as well that he was going to be coming in ready to go and ready to play and ready to work. And so sort of like two horses, sort of stallions, just sort of running alongside each other. And there is a bit of that healthy competitiveness of because the play is literally called Top Dog Underdog. So we have to lean into that. And we have to lean into when who's on top and who's not, you know, and when that happens and when you can get those zingers in and things like that. And that was all, we kept all of that on stage. Off stage, absolutely no ego. And that was the beautiful part about working with them, because we were just curious, because we just wanted to make the play better. We just wanted to make each other better, and we just needed to do a service to this play, because Susan Lloyd Parks wrote a hell of a fucking play, man. Like, it is one of the best things, and it's also one of the hardest. You know, I always think about it in terms of music, pieces of music that you can play as an actor. And so we had to figure out what each other's metaphorical sort of instruments were, and they changed night after night, moment to moment. And that jazz sometimes that we were playing, we had to know when to hold them and know when to fold them. I guess that's the thing. But like, again, we would come off stage at intermission sometimes, and Susan Lloyd Parks, she would be upstairs listening, to the words in the, she wouldn't watch it. Sometimes she'd watch it, but sometimes she'd be backstage and just listening to the words. And sometimes we didn't know she was there. And so we'd come backstage and just start talking about what we were frustrated about, why this part of the play is still bothering us a week before we're closing, or a few days before we closed. I remember coming back at intermission and be like, I get it. Oh my God. Yaya, like, what the, oh my, when you did, it's only because of something that he did or didn't do, or a look or whatever that is, an action that was slightly different from the day before. It was all about nuance in this play. Even though it's such a in your face, you know, piece of material, but we would come backstage and then SLP would like peek her head out the door and be like, oh, that's interesting that you guys, and we're like, oh no. Like, why the hell did she write that? Or like, why would she let Lincoln say that to him? And da, 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 da. And then she'd be, you know, and then we'd engage in a dialogue about it, and or not, or we just, or she just give us that sly smile that she loves to give and just sort of walk away. we encouraged each other to have fun. We pushed each other, man, because we knew all we had was each other. The only other person who could save me out there is Yaya. Yeah. So, you know, at the end of the day, we had to show up at 100%, and that's what we did. It was mentally draining, physically draining. But night after night, by the end, you know, I Lincoln transitions and I get to let him go. And then a bit of a rebirth, because I get to bring him back the next night and play all over again.
Yeah. Now that you're a few months on from the run, do you have a sense of, is there anything about the experience that you think you will carry forward with you as an actor and as you are approaching the work you're doing either on stage or on screen in the future?
Fearlessness. Fearlessness. I got to see Jerusalem in London because I missed the performance when they did it in New York, the New York run. Right. And I remember looking at Mark Rylance and going, I remember asking myself and asking friends, and I said, why don't we have that? Like, why can't, like, I've never seen, like, why can't we get up there and do that and have the opportunity to use all of ourselves and just play and take risks? Where are those? And then I was like, well, where are those roles for Black people, blah, blah, blah? And then I said, wait, they're there. They're absolutely there. Top Dog Underdog is one of them. And it's up to us to take that risk, and we have to be fearless. I was so lucky. I got to have, you know, quick dinner with Patti LuPone last night. Mm. Random surprise.
All right.
Here in ATL. My fellow Juilliard family.
Yeah.
And also working on a piece with her and her son, Josh, as well. Mm. But we were talking about just that fearlessness and why that's important. And sometimes, you know, in my opinion, I think it's, you know, we forget that. We forget that we are allowed to take risks and allowed to go as far as we can, because that's where the gold is. You know, I told myself after seeing Mark Rylance in that performance, I was like, I'm going to find a role that I can do that with, and be damned, you know, what anybody thinks about it. I'm going to see how far I can take it and how deep I can go with it. And also to remind myself that those roles do exist, that we do have those great Black playwrights who write about the diaspora, and it's up to us to honor them and step into that fully. And so I take that from Top Dog Underdog, and also just being able to keep my eyes out into the world and not so insular on the industry and all of that. And just to be reminded that there are people who live their life day to day dealing with a lot. And so there was a lot of care and love that we also had to carry with us in order to get through that show. And just reminded us to keep our eyes out into the world and continue to love, you know?
Mm. Yeah. I'm about to ask you about some of the work that you're doing on screen, but first I have to ask about what you're working on with Patti LuPone and her son that you just mentioned.
We're doing, he put together this incredible, these radio plays, and he asked me to narrate a piece, and Patti had come to see the show as well. And she asked me to be a part of it. And I was like, of course, like, yeah. You know, why not? Like, and it's a Eudora Welty, is the writer and a beautiful short story. And we just happened to all be down here in ATL at the same time. And she surprised me. She was like, hey, I'm here to, let's have some dinner. I was like, okay. It's going to be a beautiful, beautiful story.
And that's like, that'll be like a podcast, or do you have a sense of how it will be released?
Yeah, I believe so. I mean, yeah. They've done a few of them in the past. I think one of the first ones started with maybe Stephen McKinley Henderson. And then Samuel Jackson and LaTanya Richardson Jackson did one as well, and a few of them. So they're incredibly, they're really good. Yeah. So I was just like, yeah, I'd love to do that.
Great. I was looking at kind of, you know, some of the film work you've done and some of the stuff you've got coming up, and a lot of that has ties to theater. Like a couple of the projects that will be coming up for you is the Color Purple musical, the movie musical. And then I'm talking to you, you're in Atlanta right now, working on The Piano Lesson, which is a film version of related to the production that was on Broadway earlier this fall. Is that by design, these sort of theatrical links to a lot of the screen work, or is that just a coincidence?
It really isn't, honestly. Like I don't know how or why. I mean, I guess I can see it because I love theater and so that's, I can see how that can bleed into the work. In the Heights was, I think, the first sort of crossing of that genre that I got to do that with. And then so my Heights producers did Color Purple, they asked me to come do Harpo in that, and that's going to be out at the end of the year. So I was
Christmas,
of course.
On
Christmas, and that looks incredible.
Yeah,
I just love.
Yeah,
to
what
come
can you tell us about
with,
it? Tell us a little bit about the.
Honestly, I just watched a little featurette that they sent this, which took us back to last summer. Shooting it, and Danielle Brooks, who I went to Juilliard with, we were classmates, kids dreaming about it all, and cut to this season where they're doing piano lesson a few blocks up. Yeah. She's on a marquee, I'm down the block. And then we, right before that, we got to play, she's playing Sophia and I'm playing Harpo.
Right. Yeah.
Taraji P. Henson, Fantasia Barrino, Coleman Domingo. It's honestly, the cast is stacked beyond measure and it's incredible. We had the time of our lives shooting that. It's beautiful. Everything from the sound design to the costumes to the locations. And Oprah, you know, Oprah and Spielberg are back as producers on this, and you can tell that it's a labor of love for everybody involved. It is a beautiful reimagining of the musical, and Blitz Bazoule, our director, led us brilliantly. So I honestly, I think people's minds are going to be blown when they see it. Because again, it subverts expectations. It's like, it's beyond expectations. So I'm thrilled about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And now we're doing piano lesson.
Yeah. You mentioned In the Heights and The Color Purple. So you sing. Would you want to do a musical on stage on Broadway?
Allegedly, I sing. Yes. Yeah. It would definitely have to be the right thing. I've been approached about it. But it would definitely have to be the right story, the right project, the right, I like right now, I just sort of like doing things that involve music. Even in Top Dog Underdog, as Susan Lloyd Parks asked me, she was like, you know, I play the guitar in that. And she was like, so I was like, okay, I'll just strum a few strings and kind of just say the words. And she was like, no, like sing, like, I want you to sing. Like, you know, I was like sing a whole song, like make up a whole, she was like, yeah, why not? So, you know, I was like, okay, shit, here we go. And so I always, it's interesting because music always seems to find me, because that was how I grew up. I grew up singing in the church. And so that all has always found me in the projects that I'm working in. So yeah, it would have to be the right thing, but I'm open to it. It's just, it hasn't found me yet.
Yeah. Yeah. And did you get a chance, you're working on Piano Lesson right now, did you get a chance to see the production? Because you were on stage at around the same time. Did you get a chance to see the show before?
Oh yeah.
Before, after?
I was blowing up LaTanya's phone. You know, I was like, Yaya and I are free tonight. You know, can we sneak into like the dress rehearsal or the tech? Yeah. So I did see it early on. Cool. And then I also got a chance to go back and see it later, because I think our schedules had flipped during the holidays. Sometimes, you know, you have 10 shows a week.
And yeah.
You know how that goes. But we did get to see it a little later on in the run as well. And it was just as beautiful and just as powerful. And so I was honored when they asked me to come down and join the cast.
Who are you playing, for folks who don't know?
Reverend Avery.
Yeah.
Avery Brown. Yeah. And it's a again, you know, when we're talking about adaptations, I just think it's just so well done. It's so well done. It's the creative team is incredible. And I know and have known everybody working on it for a long time. I think going into projects, that's what I wanted to feel like is camp, you know, almost, or like, you know, we're just going to go work on this thing together as a family and see what we can find and do it with good people and with good intentions. And at the end of the day, you know, you can't go wrong, when you put the work in. Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah. We should mention that before those two films, you've got another movie coming out this summer. It's called The Last Voyage of the Demeter. Which sounds super cool. I was the kid who read Dracula and was really compelled by that one chapter that's about Dracula, you know, getting on a boat and riding across where does he go? Does he go to America? No, he goes to London. He goes
London.
And that sounds like fun. Is that a scary movie? I assume it's a scary movie. It's a horror movie. Yeah,
it is. It's a thriller. Yeah. It's Universal and Amblin doing that film. And honestly, that film has been around for over 20 years and they just have not been able to make it. And until they found me. I'm joking. No, but it all the pieces, I'm just thankful because like all the pieces came together at the right time. And I'm, you know, it's set in the 1800s, mm. late 1800s. My character is British. He's a Cambridge educated doctor who ends up on this boat back to London, back to his home.
Right.
And the boat just happens to have a passenger on board that probably shouldn't be on yep. there. And but it's thrilling. The reason I signed on to it was because it really was a character piece and versus the sort of crazy jump scares and all of that. Mm-hmm. It was sort of, you know, what's around the corner, you know what I mean? Yeah. And it's a great, one of the great chapters out of Dracula that, you know, you're surprised. It's like, why didn't they think about, like, who wouldn't make a movie about this? Like, so I'm just glad I got the opportunity to jump on that. It's going to be fun. It's going to be a good one.
Yeah. How do you think about, you do a lot of screen work. How do you think about integrating theater into your career overall as you go forward in terms of, you know, working theater runs at in the theater into your schedule alongside all the work you're doing in film and TV?
You make time. You know, you just make time for the things that you love. For me, I started in the theater off Broadway, then off Broadway, and then Romeo and Juliet. I remember we did years ago on Broadway, and then things started picking up on the film and TV side, and part of me just missed that live wire act of being up there in front of 1,000 people with no net. And the best of the best, you know, when you talk to Denzel, when you talk to Sam Jackson, it's crazy when you hear their stories too, because they all came up in the theater. You know, when you talk about the people that they work with, Instant Jange, and like all of the companies and the all the Wilsonites, and you know, it makes me feel good to be amongst, you know, to be among the numbers, you know, and like, I hear what they say about going back because it strengthens, it just continues to strengthen those muscles that, you know, you can get lazy when you're on film and TV. It's a very comfortable and cushy life. I have no complaints about it and I do enjoy it, but you know, there's something about being able to come back to your roots that strengthens that work as well.
Yeah.
And for me, it's a marathon. It's not a sprint. I'm very picky about the things I choose. I'm very much to, like, I'm sure my agent's chagrin. I always got to come back to it. And I remember after Compton happened and we did Kong Skull Island and traveling all around the world, and I was like, oh, okay, you need to get back to the stage. Mm. And then that was 6 degrees of separation.
Right.
And so, you know, you venture out, but it always, if the calling is strong enough, it's going to always bring you back.
Yeah. What are you looking forward to most on Tony Night?
Okay. It's the after parties. I'm looking forward to just having fun because we throw a hell of an after party called the Ghost Light, and it is, we've done it for a few years now, and it is honestly one of the best. It goes until the sun comes up, and it's the best because you get to see all of your friends, everybody comes down in their ball gowns, and they're like, people come in their pajamas from like watch parties at home, you know, like it's just a good time. But I say that because I think the best part about Tony Night is that all of Broadway is there. All of the theater community is there celebrating the work and celebrating, just celebrating the art and celebrating each other. It can sometimes be a thankless job, you know what I mean? It's sometimes, you know, the these incredible ensembles of these huge musicals and plays, and to be able to have one night, at least out of the year, to just for us all to get together and say, we see you, you know, and to celebrate. I mean, and also I'm really excited because it's the first, I think it's the first time that four Black men have ever been nominated in lead actor category in 76 years. and of the history of the Tonys.
Yeah.
And so it's again, it's a testament to progress, and it's a testament to change and where we are in the theater. I think we're such a progressive community, and Hollywood, you know, is slowly catching up. Yeah. But Tony Night's just going to be a party, we'll be uptown at the ceremony.
Yeah.
In the Heights.
Yeah.
So that's going to be a good time. I used to live there when I was in school. Mm-hmm. I was a broke college kid. So it's just you look forward to the party of the night, not just the after parties, but just celebrating each other and having a good ass time.
Yeah. What's it like to be in, this is in air quotes, in competition with your castmate in the same category?
It's thrilling. Yeah. I'm like, there's no competition. Like, yeah. That's like, it honestly, whoever gets it that night, that's just the icing on the cake, because for me, the win is if you ever get the opportunity to play eight shows a week, eight shows a week. Yeah. And to be able to do what we do, that's the win, you know? I'm just thrilled, cause I know all of the nominees in my category and I've seen all of their work, and I know how much heart and soul they put into it, and I just feel like I have the biggest smile on my face, because I'm like, I'm part of this group, and I'm like, this is mind-blowing to me. You know, I've known Wendell since I was 10, performing with him as a kid at City Center, then following him to Juilliard and Steve McKinley Henderson being in Group One of Juilliard, and Yaya is my brother, and Sean Hayes kills it, and you know, Good Night Oscar. So it's just great. And even at the press day the other day, just getting to see each other, I got to see Sean and just be like, you know, and just sing his praises and stuff. It's just awesome.
Yeah. Well, have a great time on Tony Night.
Thank you. We will.
Yeah, and we look forward to seeing The Color Purple and The Piano Lesson and everything you've got coming up in the future.
Thanks
so much, Corey. Great to talk to you.
Appreciate it. You as well.
That was Corey Hawkins, now nominated for a Tony Award for Leading Actor in a Play for his performance in Top Dog Underdog. Look for him in the movie musical The Color Purple this Christmas. If you enjoyed this conversation and others we've had here on Stagecraft, I'd be so grateful if you took the time to rate and review us wherever you listen to podcasts. It really helps. Or tell a friend about Stagecraft. Find past episodes and subscribe at all the places you get your pods, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and on the Broadway Podcast Network, a great place to find more theater for your ears. Until next episode, find me on Twitter at @GCoxVariety. Thanks for listening, and see you at the theater.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.